Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Lowe's has the brands pros trust to get the job done. You can now shop new Catalyst fencing solutions and save big when you do. 10% off when you buy in bulk. Plus, save $180 on a DeWalt 12-inch dual bevel sliding compound miter saw. Now just $449. Our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Valid through 5/6 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Picture a 13-year-old boy sitting across from a private investigator, not a cop, a PI, hired by the most famous human being on the planet. The investigator looks at the boy and asks a direct question. Has Michael Jackson ever done anything inappropriate? The boy says no. His name is Jordan Chandler, and within weeks, his father will tell the world that his son was by the King of Pop. Within months, Michael Jackson will pay approximately $23 million to make the whole thing go away. And Jordan Chandler, the boy who said no in that room, will never speak publicly about any of it again. Not the 2005 criminal trial when prosecutors begged for his testimony. Not after Leaving Neverland aired, not when the Casio family went public, not ever. Whatever the truth is, it left that room with a 13-year-old kid and it never came back. This is part 2 of our 5-part series on the accusations against Michael Jackson. And this episode is about the case that started everything. The 1993 Chandler allegations, the extortion tapes, the $23 million, the strip search, and the silence that has lasted over 3 decades. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're listening to us or watching us, Substack, YouTube, whatever it may be. Hit subscribe so you don't miss any of our series. The relationship began the way all of them seemed to. Jackson met Jordan Chandler's family through a car rental business. The boy's stepfather offered Jackson a free rental if the singer would call his 13-year-old stepson, who was a fan. Well, the car turned into visits. Visits turned into sleepovers at Neverland Ranch. Sleepovers turned into international travel, Las Vegas, Monaco, Paris. Jordan's mother, June, encouraged the friendship. She went on CNN and explained, "The sleepovers is innocent. They play so hard, they fall asleep, they're exhausted. There's nothing more to it than that." Jordan's father, Evan Chandler, initially encouraged it too. He was a dentist with screenwriting ambitions. He'd co-written Robin Hood, Men in Tights, and having Michael Jackson in his son's life wasn't exactly bad for networking. Then the friendship started disturbing Evan's custody schedule. Visits to Neverland overlapped with Evan's time. The dynamic between Evan and his ex-wife June grew more hostile, and Evan began to focus on a question that would eventually detonate across every single tabloid on earth. What exactly was going on between the most famous adult in the world and his 13-year-old son? I mean, think of it for just a second. Think about what we just talked about right there. A celebrity, an adult man, not just making the quick phone call to your kid. "Hey, yeah, your dad's helping me rent a car. Heard you're a big fan. Hey, great. Have a great summer." That would be normal. That would not be questionable. That'd be like, "Wow, that's pretty amazing. Neat." But the kid ends up on planes and hotels and overnight trips and sleeping in the same bedroom as that man? Again, I'm not saying anything happened. But you'd be kind of remiss to ask the question if it didn't. Because the optics of it, granted, I don't believe Michael Jackson understood optics in any way, shape, or form of this sort of lifestyle, even if nothing was going on, or he didn't care. And again, I don't know the answer. And I know we're in different times than the 1980s and 1990s, but there wasn't other. This still wasn't normal. You know, it's not like, oh, celebrities did that all the time. They always brought over children to their home for sleepover. No, they really didn't. That wasn't really a thing. And the ones who did are in prison. It's never really been a thing, if you will. It was always an oddity to Michael Jackson back then and to this day. I mean, the liabilities are insane. Even, like I said, even if nothing is happening, obviously he experienced that himself. He learned that the liabilities, even if you've done nothing, are huge and you're going to pay. Don't put yourself in that position. So why would you keep putting yourself in that position if nothing is happening? It's a fair question I think a lot of us sit with. Here's where the timeline becomes critical and where the evidence starts cutting in both directions simultaneously. On June 8th, 1993, Evan Chandler was recorded during a phone conversation with June's husband, David Schwartz. On the tape, Evan says he has a plan, a certain plan, that will result in a certain scenario if Jackson doesn't cooperate. He talks about having people ready to act on his phone call. He says that this is a direct quote from the recording, that he would, quote, destroy Michael Jackson if he doesn't get what he wants. This tape was recorded before Jordan had reportedly told anyone he'd been abused. And let that sit for a moment. The father's on tape outlining a strategy to destroy Jackson before his son has allegedly disclosed anything. 6 days later, on July 14th, Evan's attorney contacts a psychiatrist named Mathis Abrams and presents him with a hypothetical situation, not an actual case, a hypothetical. Abrams writes back that based on the hypothetical, reasonable suspicion would exist that abuse may have occurred. And yeah, I think reasonable suspicion would be there. This was 2 days before Jordan allegedly told his father anything. Evan had a psychiatrist letter supporting suspicion of abuse before his son reportedly made any accusations. Now, that's not to say a father can't suspect something and the confessions have not yet been made. That can certainly happen. There's a world where that exists. And the dad is just connecting the dots of the tea leaves and knows damn well there's something fishy going on here. And that effort's going to pay. I could see feeling that way as a father. If you know damn well that something is going on, wanting to make that predator pay, I get it. Sure. Doesn't make you money hungry. Doesn't make you, it means you're wanting to expose someone. I guess if you truly want to expose someone, you'd want to go more to the legal ramifications that would prevent that person from carrying out such horrible things on other people again, not just getting a payday. I mean, that would be the more ethical way of handling it, in my opinion. But sometimes the civil world is the only place that some of these accusations can be litigated because the bar is very different there versus criminal, where you may not be able to get criminal conviction over here. You might be able to get civil over here, and the awareness flows from that. I don't know. I'm not here to profess that I know their goals or thought processes when they're dealing with what, if it was legit, a family crisis, a personal crisis for that child. But I am saying we can look at it that way too. Don't know if that's, can't get into his head. But again, let's try and paint this without judgment. And here's all the different ways to absorb this, not just the same ways we've been absorbing this for the last 30 years. Let's try and take this all in. Then comes July 16th, the date the Chandler family says Jordan finally disclosed to his father. According to their account, Evan pulled one of Jordan's baby teeth and had an anesthesiologist assist with the sedation. Under the effects of the sedation, or shortly after, Jordan allegedly told his father that Jackson had touched him. Defenders of Jackson have raised questions about the use of sedation in the context and whether it could have influenced the boy's statements. The anesthesiologist denied those claims and said the drug was used solely for dental purposes. And again, could be true. Got a baby tooth pulled, sedation was used. Sometimes you say weird things, but you know what? People under the sedation gas at a dentist sometimes say things that aren't true, too. You ever have? I've experienced this. People are talking about crazy things. What are you talking about? Confessions are best made not under the influence of any sort of substance. Again, another one of the gazillion gray areas of this case. On August 4th, Evan Chandler demanded $20 million from Jackson. Not justice, not a police report, $20 million. Jackson's team counteroffered $1 million as a test. His private investigator, Anthony Pelicano, later said it was an attempt to see if Chandler would take money and go away, which would prove extortion. Evan rejected the million. Pelicano then lowered the offer to $350,000. Evan's attorney, Barry Rothman, wanted more. In a meeting at the Westwood Marquis Hotel, Evan confronted Jackson directly, read aloud the psychiatrist's letter, and told Jackson, according to multiple accounts, "I'm going to ruin you." Jackson's team filed extortion charges against Evan Chandler. The Los Angeles Police Department opened an investigation into the allegations, and the biggest celebrity scandal of the decade had officially begun. Now, here's where Jackson's defenders make their strongest case, and it's a case worth hearing. Evan Chandler was on tape threatening Jackson before his son allegedly disclosed anything, and we just talked about that, how those dynamics could make sense. He demanded money before going to police. He sought $20 million in exchange for not filing a lawsuit. That's textbook extortion language. Now, could someone extort someone even if there are crimes? They'd rather get the payday and not deal with the criminal end of things? Yeah. Can happen, does happen. Jackson's investigator, Pelicano, produced the recordings and called it a shakedown. The Jackson family held a press conference calling it extortion. Multiple children who had spent time at Neverland, including Brett Barnes and the young Wade Robson, publicly stated that Jackson had never behaved inappropriately with them. Police searched Neverland and other Jackson properties and found no incriminating physical evidence. The FBI would continue examining Jackson's property for years, and no material pointing to criminal activity was ever recovered. If there had been anything illegal found in those searches, anything at all, charges would have followed. They didn't. Police also interviewed dozens of children who had spent time with Jackson. Every single one defended him. Several parents later described what they called aggressive investigative techniques. Officers allegedly telling children that police had compromising photographs of them, telling parents their children had been, even though the children denied it. Whether those tactics reflected zealous investigation or manufactured evidence depends entirely on which side of the story you've believed. And here's where the accusers supporters pushed back. And their case is, of course, also worth hearing. Evan was investigated for extortion and no charges were filed against him. The district attorney's office reviewed the situation and concluded that the discussions appeared to be attempts to settle a possible civil case, not extortion. It's a fine line there. The settlement that eventually happened explicitly stated that Jordan remained free to cooperate with any criminal investigation. The Chandler's attorney publicly stated that nobody's bought anybody's silence. And this is a part that Jackson's defenders have never comfortably explained. If Evan fabricated everything for money, if the whole thing was a shakedown from a bitter father in a custody dispute, then why did Jordan refuse to recant? He sought legal emancipation from both of his parents. He walked away from the money, the family, and the public eye entirely. That is not the behavior of someone who was coached into a lie for a payday. People who lie for money tend to stay close to the money. The strip search was supposed to be a definitive moment. In December 1993, police photographed and videotaped Jackson's body to compare it against Jordan Chandler's description of identifying marks and physical characteristics. This should have ended the debate. A match would have been devastating for Jackson. A mismatch would have been devastating for Chandler's. Instead, it produced more ambiguity. Initial reports from law enforcement sources indicated the photos did not match Jordan's description, but DA Tom Sneddon, remember Tom Sneddon? Later suggested they did match. Some accounts indicate Jordan described Jackson as circumcised. Jackson's autopsy reportedly confirmed he was not. The physical evidence, the single piece of evidence that should have been conclusive, became another battlefield where both sides claimed victory and neither could prove it. In January 1994, Jackson settled a civil case for approximately $23 million. $15 million was reported placed in a trust for Jordan until he turned 18. June and Evan Chandler each reportedly received $1.5 million. The rest went to legal fees. Jackson's supporters have always pointed to this as a practical decision. His team wanted the distraction over, his health was suffering, and the criminal case couldn't proceed without Jordan's testimony, which the family stopped providing after the settlement. His accusers' supporters have always pointed to it as consciousness of guilt because no innocent person writes a check for $23 million. Well, they do it all the time if you got it. But the settlement question is more complicated than either side wants to admit. Jackson's team argued at the time that a protracted civil trial would have consumed years and destroyed any chance of focusing on his career. His attorney argued that the settlement was a cost-benefit decision, not an admission. And there is some logic to that. $23 million, a lot of money to all of us. To Michael Jackson, not so much. To the cost of continuing a career, not so much. Continue your career, continue to be bogged down by allegations that you believe are not true. The only way to get there is to pay this. That's really the reality that he faced, whether he did it or not. And you got to think, if he didn't do it, his interest is continuing his life and his career and his livelihood and what he loved doing. So yeah, you would make the decision, make this asshole go away if he didn't do it. And this is the only way to do it, then I guess we're going there. Because the public is already out here with pitchforks in flames and ready to destroy. And facts don't matter when you get to that point. People have already dug in with their opinion on either side. And if you didn't do it, and the villagers think you did, and you'd like to continue operating in some way, shape, or form, doing what you love because you didn't do anything wrong, then you're going to find the path of least resistance to do that. The entertainment industry runs on momentum, and Jackson was in the middle of a global tour when the allegations hit. But here's the counterpoint. The settlement didn't just end a lawsuit. It effectively ended the criminal investigation. Without Jordan's cooperation, prosecutors had nothing. Two grand juries heard the evidence. Neither indicted. The case was closed. If the goal was to prevent criminal accountability. Like we said at the beginning, if that's your ethical, moral stance, or I'm going to destroy you and prevent you from doing this to other people, that settlement, well, that didn't really get there now, did it? I mean, it certainly started the road to destruction, but it didn't start down the road to incarceration. It led to a payday and stopped. Again, you can argue that too. You don't want to go through the hell of a criminal trial and all of that. There's a lot of ways you can look at this, and everybody's operating from their point of what is going to serve their own self-interest best. The criminal investigation continued after the settlement. Prosecutors presented the evidence at two separate grand juries. Neither indicted. Without Jordan's testimony, the case could not move forward, and Jordan Chandler had effectively vanished. And then the aftermath. June Chandler testified at Jackson's 2005 criminal trial and told the court she hadn't spoken to her son in over a decade. Jordan had cut ties with both of his parents. Evan Chandler closed his dental practice in 1994, never returned to professional life, and took his own life in November of 2009, 5 months after Michael Jackson's death. The family was destroyed. There's no version of this story, guilty or innocent, where the Chandler family came out whole. If Jordan did have these things happen to him, he was failed by every system that should have protected him. Failed by the police, who couldn't build a case without him. Failed by a legal system that let a settlement substitute for justice. Failed by parents whose dysfunction made his trauma secondary to their own agendas. He was paid off and then abandoned. If Jordan was coached, he was used as a weapon by his father. Trapped in a lie that consumed his childhood and left alone with a fabrication so enormous it ate everything around it. His relationship with his mother, his relationship with his father, his identity, his future, either way. A 13-year-old boy lost his family, his voice, and any chance at a normal life. And the man who was either his abuser or the victim of his father's scheme paid $23 million and walked into a decade of escalating accusations that would follow him to the grave. $23 million is a number everyone cites. It's the shorthand for guilt or the shorthand for extortion, depending on who's using it. But the number that might matter more is zero. That's the number of words Jordan Chandler has spoken publicly about Michael Jackson since the settlement was signed. More than 30 years of silence. His father is dead. His mother is estranged. The man he accused is buried. And Jordan Chandler remains the most important witness in the most famous case in modern history. And he said absolutely nothing. His silence doesn't tell us what happened, but it tells us that whatever it was, it was big enough to make a man disappear from his own story. Next, we go to the courtroom, the criminal trial, the boy who said Jackson did these things to him, the jury that said the state didn't prove it, and the witnesses who helped acquit Jackson and would later say every word of his testimony was a lie. That's part three. Press subscribe so you don't miss it. Wherever you get podcasts, the links are in the description. Love for you to weigh in with your thoughts on our Substack or on YouTube. Those links are in the description as well. We'll continue our conversation right there. Until next time, my name is Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Big savings are in the air. Don't miss your chance at 15% cash back during Rakuten's Big Give Week. Shop and get rewarded at your favorite stores like Adidas, KitchenAid, Expedia, and hundreds more. So go ahead and refresh your closet, spruce up your home, book that trip, and much more. But 15% cash back is only from May 4th to the 11th. So join now. Go to Rakuten.com or download the Rakuten app and join for free and start saving. That's Rakuten.